The following pre-recorded program, paid for by Apartment Water Solutions, LLC, does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of the staff, management, or ownership of this station.
Hi, this is Paul Marks, host and producer of Multifamily Matters. Today we're going to air the best of Multifamily Matters. It's a very educational and informative episode, so listen and enjoy the best of Multifamily Matters.
Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses the current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. Stay tuned and listen to the movers and shakers in multifamily share their opinions and thoughts about what's old, what's new, and where the multifamily industry is heading in the future. You are listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Well, welcome and thank you for joining in to Multifamily Matters, the only broadcast radio show in the nation that is solely dedicated to the multifamily industry. I'm Paul Marks, your host, and we have a great show today with wonderful guests who are experts on today's topic. So you have recently purchased or will manage a recently purchased value-add multifamily property. How do you hit the ground running to ensure that the value-add strategy designed for the property will be implemented in a timely and cost-efficient manner? So with this in mind, our topic today is tips and tricks for implementing a value-add strategy. Joining me by phone is longtime multifamily industry veteran Jamie Rauscher, the founder and president of Axiom Multifam Consulting, and Greg Lozenek, chief operating officer at Newcastle Limited. Welcome, everyone.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So I guess it would be a good idea, Jamie, for you to define what a value-add property is versus another type of property, so our listeners are all on the same page.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, you know, when I look to define what a value-add is, you know, it's a value-add program. So you're taking an asset. In a lot of cases, this is an asset that's in a great submarket, but maybe, you know, it's not the worst performing, it's not the best performing, and you're looking at how can we add value to this asset, and it's a couple of different ways. It's adding, you know, the monetary value, but it's also adding value to the residents' life, the people that live there and call that home. So, you know, when you're looking for that value-add opportunity, you're looking at what are some of the things we can do to enhance the exterior. Maybe it's updating the amenities, it's doing an overall facelift of the buildings on the inside of the units. It's, you know, how can we improve? How can we kind of take it up to the next level? You know, I think, in my opinion, you don't want to take it up to the top of the market. You always want to leave that room for continued growth. But if you can take it somewhere, you know, midway, maybe it's, you know, changing out and going to black appliances or stainless. It's moving to a solid surface countertop. And a lot of times, you know, we look at what the submarket is wanting, what people are looking for in that area.
And Greg, I guess a lot of the strategy when you're looking to determine what you're going to do to make it a value-add property comes about during the due diligence phase. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. It actually, you know, comes about really at the beginning, even before that, with the strategy or investment intent behind your capital source. You know, are they looking for, what type of return are they looking for? And then what kind of markets do they want to play in? They want to play in primary, secondary, tertiary. But that strategy will then help identify targeted properties. And then from there, you know, you're looking for the opportunities that fit that strategy. You know, whether that's taking a relatively young property, a 10-year-old and 10 years old, and updating the unit interiors to reflect the current demand for granite countertops, or you're buying value-add workforce housing and renovating a 30-year-old property, or in some cases, in some of the urban areas, a 100-year-old property.
And Jamie, as far as the hold period, when someone invests in an asset and purchases it, everybody, are there different hold periods that are important to different investors? What part does that play, and how far you go in a value add?
Yeah, sure. I mean, if you're looking for a shorter term hold, so let's say it's 3 to 5 years, you know, you've got to hit you've got to hit the, obviously you want to hit the ground running, but you've got to, you really got to hit on what's going to make the immediate impact. Typically, you know, in my experience, that's the interiors. Where can we update the interiors to drive the rent? When you're going to do a shorter term hold, you've also got to be mindful of, again, you're not wanting to take it to the top of the market. When you go to sell that asset in 3 to 5 years, you want to make sure that there's still opportunity for that next buyer to come in. So if you're moving to black appliances, maybe in 3 to 5 years, the opportunity for the next buyer is stainless. If it's a longer term hold, then, you know, your returns are going to diminish, you know, usually after about 5 to 7 years. So, you know, you take all of those into consideration.
Yeah, and I think, again, that a lot of that's dictated by the strategy of your capital source.
Right.
You know, Jamie's point, if you're a shorter term hold, you got to really look at the priority of work and the quantity and quality of that work. You know, if you've got a significant plumbing or electrical issue and you got a 2-year hold on it, you may look more to, you know, kind of solve the immediate issue versus trying to do the long-term fix. You're going to make sure, you know, while your pop is in your unit interiors, you want to make sure that your common areas and your curb appeal are at the level to drive the traffic that you need to get the rents that you need. And so you got to really understand what your current demographic is, what the demographic is around the surrounding neighborhoods, and to determine when I pop the rents $300-$400, are my current residents going to be able to afford that? Do I have to go outside my current residence, and are there people in the immediate area, or are we talking about bringing people in from an entirely different area to lease these higher rent apartments?
Yeah, and I've got a client that buys properties that are value add, and he was what I consider a flipper, because he only holds the properties for 18 months or 24 months, and it seems like what he's doing is basically cosmetic type upgrades as well as anything that will add to his NOI. So when he puts it back on the market, he can demand a higher value for it. And I don't know, in today's market, if that's something that you see as much because of the way the economy changes. I know that certain parts of the country have different ups and downs right now in the asset purchasing. So what are you guys finding with that? Is it something that you're seeing a consistent situation where the assets are still being very active as far as being moved?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot of pent-up demand from capital for assets, and in particular now value-add assets, because the returns on core assets have been driven down pretty low with the existing cap rates and interest rate structure. To the point of your client, you know, a lot of people will go in and buy a value add deal and somewhere in 18 months to 24 months try to sell it. And it kind of goes back to what we were just talking about. What's your priority of work? And to Jamie's point, leaving a little meat on the bone, you know, maybe you want to focus on getting your common areas fixed so you can drive the right traffic, and then you lease or renovate a handful of apartments and prove that you can get the rent increase, and then you sell the dream to the next investor.
Right. Jamie, what as far as the due diligence process, we've got a couple of minutes left in this segment, but as far as the due diligence process goes, what are some of the most important things that you try and accomplish that'll hopefully keep surprises from happening later?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to depend on the age of the asset, you know, what the condition of the physical plan is. But I think kind of the consistent items is understanding what the demand is in that submarket. Where do people work? You know, what are they wanting to have in their apartment, in their apartment home? So, you know, for example, if you're in a submarket that's very popular with the millennial generation, you're going to push technology. You're going to push anything that offers them instant gratification because they're impatient. They want it. They want it now. They'll forgive certain things. You know, over half of you know, millennials that, you know, they were surveyed probably about 6 months ago, and they said, we would rather have technology in our unit, whether it's the Nest thermometers, whether it's the USB ports. We would rather have that than a parking space in front of our building. You know, they want that technology. So if you know that that's present in the submarket, then you push for that. You know, you want to find those things out during the due diligence process. And it's also finding out who's living there today. So if you're looking at, you know, for example, if you're looking at your lease file audit and you know your rents are about $100 below where you want them to be, but the people that are living there are barely making 2.5 times to 3 times the rent, then you know, hey, you know, my first 6 months, I'm going to have some pretty high turnover, because as I go and I start pushing these rents up, the people that are living there today aren't going to be able to afford that. So then you've got to start looking at your turnover year one, and you know, you're not going to have what your industry standard is, which is about 55%, might be, you know, 75 to 80, and you have to budget and plan accordingly for that.
Well, it's fascinating topic. We've got to take a quick break. We're going to be back after these messages. You are listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Tired of being burned by your carpet vendor? Nobody has you covered like Rasa Floors. They lead the industry with same-day service and cutting-edge technology, like their online ordering portal and mobile app, so you can place orders instantly. The professionals at Rasa Floors are the industry experts offering the hottest new styles of carpet and hard surfaces that will help you achieve your goals. Visit them on social media, watch their videos, and look for them at local trade shows. Rasa Floors will help you make ready your apartment homes for new residents. For more information, visit rasafloors.com.
Your property and liability insurance is one of your highest expenses. Put Ted W. Allen & Associates' 50-plus years of experience in multifamily insurance to work for you. If you have multiple properties on separate policies, you may qualify for a master policy, which can eliminate the need for multiple insurance renewals and provide you significantly lower premiums. Call Ted W. Allen & Associates at 281-378-7500. That's 281-378-7500. Or online at tedwallen.com.
Your multifamily property's water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. E-Conserve has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call E-Conserve today at 713-662-3220. For a free analysis of your property, that's eConserve at 713-662-3220.
Well, we're back and you're listening to Multifamily Matters, and we're discussing the topic of tips and tricks for implementing a value-add strategy. I'm Paul Marks, and joining me by phone is longtime multifamily industry veteran Jamie Rauscher, the founder and president of Axiom Multifamily Consulting, and also Greg Lozenak, chief operating officer at Newcastle Limited. I do want to take a moment and let our listeners know that if you would like to provide show topics, guest ideas, or any suggestions, or just listen to any archived episode of Multifamily Matters, you can go to our website at www.multifamilyradio.com. Before we closed out the last segment, we were talking about due diligence and demographics and so forth. And I know, Greg, you wanted to kind of piggyback on some of the things that Jamie was saying. So let us know what your thoughts are.
Yeah, so Jamie was talking about demographics, and I think that's a very key part of this. You could have the best renovation strategy, but at the end of the day, if it's not going to attract the right residents, or you're not going to be able to attract the right residents, and your current residents or residents in that immediate demographic aren't going to be able to pay that increased rent, the strategy is going to fail.
Right.
So you really got to understand what your the demographic in the area can afford, and that'll tailor to some degree what you do on your renovation strategy is, what your scope of work is. And then Jamie was talking about amenities and especially with the millennials and the tech, but there's, you know, again, goes back to understanding what your demographic is. If you've got a large component of families or workforce housing, you know, service-based amenities are becoming very popular as well, and high demand. And if you have families at your properties, they're probably more interested in those service-based amenities, like after-school programs. Do you have something going on at your property where there's structured events for their school-age children? Mm-hmm. What kind of services are you bringing in on weekends? It's tax time. Are you bringing in consultants, CPAs, to help them prepare their taxes? Things like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's very interesting. I know that I visited a property several months ago that on a Saturday I was dropping by to see the assistant manager, and there was a big truck outside with loading up. I guess they had a class with some type of a spinning type class where they had 20 or so spinning bicycles, and which obviously a typical property wouldn't necessarily have in their own workout facility. So they brought them in, and when I talked to her about it, she said that was amenity that that their residents love, is to be able to have those types of things happen on the property. Jamie, what are you seeing in those types of things?
From an amenity, you know, standpoint, when you've got the families that maybe have the school age children, so you know, this is, you know, kindergarten, maybe up through middle school, they're looking for, you know, you're attracting people that in most cases, on a value add asset, these are people that are renting out of necessity. You know, they're renting because they have to. They're at a point in their life where they're not ready, or maybe they're not willing to make the jump into home purchase, but they need the, you know, the flexibility and the affordability sometimes that an apartment will offer. So you want to offer them the things that maybe they would have in a home that you don't have sometimes in an apartment community. So it's open green space. It's the creating kind of that open community feel somewhere in the apartment. It's the outdoor kitchens. We've done a lot with, the Eno Farms, the large elevated patios, pet runs for people that have pets. You know, they're not going to have a fenced-in backyard, but you want to have somewhere where they can go with their pets. Obviously, playgrounds are huge, enhancing the pool area. And then the services, like you mentioned, with the spin classes, the yoga. Greg mentioned after school, you know, sometimes it's having a mobile library that comes in, you know, every Friday. Looking at the service-based amenities, sometimes those are the easiest ones to implement. They're typically very low cost. You just have to kind of be creative and find out what your residents want.
Yeah, food trucks is another great one, especially for the families where both parents work, and you get some type of service, whether it's food trucks or some other service that can bring ready-made meals to the community room and people could order ahead and pick them up on their way into their apartment. Mm-hmm. That's a great service too.
No, that is.
Yeah.
So when you are, at what point do you come up with these strategies? At what point in the process do you start to form all these ideas? Is it during the time when you're researching whether to purchase the asset, or is it after the purchase of the asset? When do you really get into the weeds on this stuff?
No, I'm sorry. It's just, I would do it during the due diligence process. I mean, it's going to help you. By the time you close, you want to have your strategy already well-defined.
Right. What would a typical due diligence process, as far as time-wise, how much should someone dedicate to it, to be thorough and to have time to think about these things? I know it probably differs from based on the size of the asset,
yeah,
and so
I mean,
forth. But
I think in some cases, you know, most buyers aren't jumping around, meaning they're not, you know, buying an urban mid-rise 1 month and then closing on a value add, in a completely different market the next month. Most buyers kind of have what they're comfortable with. You know, this is, you know, some buyers look for that product that's built between 1970, 1995, that they know that they want to be in the suburban areas. There's a good school system in place. They're going to start marketing the family. So I think a lot of times you already have kind of your go-to bucket. Mm-hmm. That even before the due diligence, you know that there's, you know, these five things we will always do on our deals because these are the kind of assets that we're buying. So, you know, if it's service related, you always have this, you know, this bucket of 3 to 5 things that you're going to do. And then to Greg's point, once you get into the due diligence, you always uncover a little unknown. And so then sometimes you just adjust. Maybe you pull back on some amenities. Maybe you, you know, you switch them out for something different. You know, maybe instead of doing a playground with a dog run, you're putting in a soccer field. You know, you kind of make those little adjustments and those tweaks.
Yeah, and I guess it all depends, too, on how much real estate you have to be able to do things like that as well. Go ahead, Greg. I'm sorry.
Right. No, those are great points by Jamie. And I think, you know, she mentioned kind of a base strategy. And I think, you know, again, if you're investing in real estate, you should have a base strategy. You shouldn't be, you know, chasing squirrels, right?
Right.
And when you have that base strategy, you can then tailor the needs to each property, because some, with as much demand as there is for multifamily these days, when people are putting offers on properties and they try to tighten up their offer and get the best, their, make their offer stand up, they'll shorten the due diligence period. Typically, you see 30 days. Mm-hmm. 30 days due diligence, 30 days close. You'll see people do two weeks of due diligence and 30-day close, or, you know, maybe they don't, you know, you 15 and 15, and so the whole process is done in 30 days, and you're now the owner. So having that base strategy to work off of is critical.
We've got a couple of, go ahead, Jamie. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. No,
I was going to say, we have a couple of minutes left, but I did want to ask both of you, as far as what is a typical implementation or rollout look like, and I'm talking in general terms. For instance, you close on the property, you get the keys. What are the first two or three things that you want to try and do? You've already come up with your strategy. Do you bring in contractors, start, you know, working the plan, and who implements it? Would it be the management team, or do you bring in outside folks to do that?
You know, in a perfect world, I mean, if you've identified, you know, you think of vendors, you know, you want a vendor that's a partner. So if you, again, know that on every asset, you know, I'm going to enhance the lighting, I'm going to add LED lighting, find your lighting partner, and they become part of your due diligence team. If you know you're going to be replacing all of your signage, then you find your good signage partner, and they're part of your due diligence team. If you wait until after close and then you start making these phone calls, you're usually 30 to 45 days in before you've got before you're ready to pull the trigger on anything. So I think finding those partners and you know, using a good, consistent group that understands what your business plan is, they know what your expectations are, and create consistency using that group. And what I found is they're more than happy to be part of your due diligence team. They'll come out with you before you even own the asset. They'll say, this is what we found, and this is what you need to budget, and here's what it's going to cost. In those cases, they can mobilize usually the first 2 weeks of closing.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think with that, Jay, I mean, that's a great point. You know, make sure you, to the extent possible, you get everybody teed up before you even close. But the first thing I would do is I'd grab that two or three, however many different floor plan vacant units you have, and set those aside, pull them out of the leasing pipeline, and get your scope hammered out. You know, it's great to sit there and pencil it out, but when you actually get in the unit, and you're trying to pull stuff out, and potentially you uncover something you didn't know was there before. You know, you find PVC pipe or aluminum wiring, and you know, get those first few vacants pulled out of the leasing pipeline and get in there and hammer out your scope.
That's a good point.
Yeah. You really wanted to get out of the box, you know, I've got one client that will actually lease an apartment from the seller, meaning we're in the due diligence process. Mm-hmm. We'll lease that apartment. We'll pay them rent on that apartment and start the renovation process before we've even closed. We've actually had success doing that. We'll pay them the rent. We might pay a little bit of a premium for their trouble, but we have access to that unit, and we're doing the renovation prior to even closing. So in some cases, on two assets, we've been able to turn something over within the first week.
Wow.
That is, you know, it depends on how aggressive you are in your strategy. If you know, that's not always something that you're going to want to consistently try and do. But if you've got an asset where, for whatever reasons, you're underwriting, you know you've got to hit it hard you know, maybe there's a vacancy problem. Maybe you're buying the property because there's opportunity to really improve the occupancy. A lot of times you can have success, you know, requesting that.
Great. Well, we've got to take a quick break. We're going to be back with our third segment of Multifamily Matters right after these messages. You're listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Looking for cost savings and curb appeal? Call WaterLogic, the nation's specialist in multifamily property water management. Using interactive, smart water technology, WaterLogic's professionals can help you save up to 40% on irrigation water annually, potentially adding tens of thousands of dollars back into your budget. Call WaterLogic at 713-983-9555 for a no-cost irrigation usage analysis. Your property will look great, and you'll be a hometown hero.
Your property and liability insurance is one of your highest expenses. Put Ted W. Allen & Associates' 50-plus years of experience in multifamily insurance to work for you. If you have multiple properties on separate policies, you may qualify for a master policy, which can eliminate the need for multiple insurance renewals and provide you significantly lower premiums. Call Ted W. Allen & Associates at 281-378-7500. That's 281-378-7500. Or online at tedwallen.com.
Tired of being burned by your carpet vendor? Nobody has you covered like Rasa Floors. They lead the industry with same-day service and cutting-edge technology, like their online ordering portal and mobile app, so you can place orders instantly. The professionals at Rasa Floors are the industry experts offering the hottest new styles of carpet and hard surfaces that will help you achieve your goals. Visit them on social media, watch their videos, and look for them at local trade shows. Rasa Floors will help you make ready your apartment homes for new residents. For more information, visit rasafloors.com.
Well, we are back and you're listening to Multifamily Matters, and we are discussing the topic of tips and tricks for implementing a value-add strategy. I'm Paul Marks, and joining me by phone is longtime industry multifamily industry veteran Jamie Rauscher, the founder and president of Axiom Multifamily Consulting, and also Greg Lozenak, chief operating officer of Newcastle Limited. I do want to take a moment and thank our exclusive sponsors that make Multifamily Matters possible. Econserve, providing multifamily water conservation solutions for properties across the U.S. Rasa Floors, the professional flooring advisor specializing in make-ready replacement flooring for the multifamily industry throughout Texas and Oklahoma. WaterLogic, the smarter way to water, providing professional irrigation water management. And Ted W. Allen & Associates, specializing in multifamily habitational insurance since 1967. Greg, we were talking at the end of last segment about the importance of the relationships with vendors. And during the break, we were talking about the GC, the general contractor, being a strong relationship. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. You know, as we were talking about on the break, and Jamie mentioned that the GC can make or break you. So hopefully you've got a GC that you're familiar with and that you have experience with. If you're bringing in a new GC, you want to make sure you carefully vet them and get recommendations from other owners. You know, I'd ask that GC for a referral list and you know, just make sure you carefully vet them and the quality of work. The other thing you want to make sure you have with your GC is some good reporting requirements, and so that then on the operation side, you want to be able to make sure that you're really tracking the rent increase you're getting, so that you can justify the return on that investment. You know, it's great to renovate your units and create this new, you know, kind of semi-new unit, but if you're not getting a return on that, then it's an entirely different story.
How long out do you start the tracking process, or do you look for that return to be there once a unit's gone through the renovation process? Is it immediate, or is it a gradual thing?
No, I think most people, I think, well, it's interesting. It's not an exact science, but I think most people will look at what's the new rate over a 12-month period and use that increased revenue to then justify the cost of the renovation.
So, Jamie, when you are rolling out your implementation of your value-add strategy, which you've thought about and created prior to closing on an asset, What happens when it doesn't go as expected? Is there a plan B?
Yeah, I think you always have to have that, you know, plan B. I mean, in some cases, an example might be, part of the interior renovation, you're going to lower the bar area in the kitchen, just to create a larger eating space. And then you go and you move that first countertop and you find out that there's plumbing lines running through that. So you have to, be prepared to abandon that. And what is your plan B? How are you going to work around that? If you're wanting to add, under cabinet lighting, for example, you go and you start doing that and you find out that, you've got some electrical issues that don't allow for that. You've already assigned a premium for that. So undermount lighting is going to bring you some type of premium. What's the backup plan? You still have to achieve that premium. Mm-hmm. If you can't do it, with your undermount cabinet lighting, then, what do you do to replace that? You can't, not get the premium. The premium's underwritten. You've got to achieve it. I think you have to have a plan B, and you've just got to be ready to respond immediately. You've got to react quickly.
Yeah,
yeah, I think.
Go ahead, Greg.
I was going to say, if you're running those kinds of things, then you got to start doing what they call value add engineering, which is really just a fancy way of finding a way to do it cheaper, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're planning on putting, for example, stainless steel appliances, and all of a sudden you're not getting the returns that you need because you can't do because the under cabinet lighting costs you more, maybe you go to a black appliance or something of that nature. The other thing is you can always try to get a bigger increase, right? Mm-hmm. So you're going to justify that additional cost and you get an additional increase, or then you have to go into the value add engineering. And then depending on your hold strategy, you might just say, well, I'm going to hold this long term, so I'm going to spend the extra cost up front because I know I'm going to get it in the back end. Or if you're at a short-term hold and you said, okay, I'm going to do 50 units, now maybe you're doing 40 and still trying to justify the rent increase.
So what is typical? Or I guess there's nothing typical in today's time, but when you're looking at doing a value-add strategy to cover all the units, do you try and do all this work on the interiors, for instance, on the turns, and budget to do a certain amount every year based on what you think the turns will be? Jamie?
I think that's the typical strategy. I mean, I've also seen strategies where a new owner will come in and completely empty out the building and do an entire building at a time. When you're doing high rises, for example, it gets a little more complicated if you have, you got piping and you got electrical systems and things like that, the duct work that run through an entire tier. Mm-hmm. You might end up doing some work in an occupied unit. Resident doesn't want to necessarily move, but they want a renovated unit and they're willing to pay the increase. So you move them temporarily into a vacant and do the work in a tier, and then you move them back in. So there's, the one end of the spectrum is you do it on turns. The other end of the spectrum is you completely empty out the property or the building, and then there's varying levels in between.
And
yeah, I mean, there's definitely, I think doing it on turn is probably the easiest and more popular way to go. It's easier to manage. It's easier on your cash flow.
And I guess, Jamie, I've told you and I told Greg this story during the break about a person who actually appeared on our show several months ago, and during the due diligence, they did not bring in a animal control or pest control person to inspect the property. And once they purchased the property, they found out they had a problem with bats, where they were a protected species of bats and had to be carefully removed from the property and relocated, which cost them quite a bit of money, which was unexpected. What are some of the things that you've seen happen, and what kind of a tip can you give to our listeners as far as who you should bring in during that due diligence phase to look for these things?
Yeah, I mean, during the due diligence, again, it's going to be based on what your renovation scope includes. You want to find those consistent partners that know what your expectations are. You're always going to have the the horror stories, things that just happen that there's no way to prepare for. You know, a similar story, pest control related, was, you know, this was several years ago, closed on a deal. And, you know, we're in the middle of renovating, you know, 5 or 10 units. And two units side by side, the GC came in and he said, you know, I can hear something in these units. I don't know where it's coming from. The unit's empty. I have no idea what this is. Went on for a couple of days. And after a long weekend, they went into the unit. They had pulled all the light plates, the light switch plates off the walls to, you know, get ready to do the painting, and found a boa constrictor in the unit. And that was the sound he had been hearing for several days, was the snake that had been left behind during a move out or escaped. And, you know, how do you plan for that? You know, you can't. You just got to – those are just kind of the wacky things that happen in multifamily.
Was that the only one, or was there a family of them in there?
Oh, it was a family. Yeah, it was a mother and her children.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, you just – those are the things that – that happen. Those are just the crazy things.
Yeah, you try to minimize those going in the beginning. And I think if you're using a third party, even if you're doing it internally, you have to be very specific about what you're looking for on unit walks. I would always recommend doing 100% unit walk, 100% lease file audit. We had a property that I was taking over years ago that we had a third party do the unit walks, third party perform the due diligence, and nothing was noted on one particular unit, but in a non-pet building, we heard a dog barking, and residents kept complaining about a dog barking. And they said, it can't be, that's a non-pet building. And finally, somebody went over there, and after 3 or 4 or 5 phone calls, somebody went over there, and in the non-pet building is a unit with a dog barking. A poor thing was scared to death because in the living room, there was a ball python in an aquarium, and the aquarium next to that's got 2 tarantulas, and there was an 8-foot boa constrictor living in the bedroom. This guy would let the thing sleep on his waterbed during the day and just kind of drink out of the toilet, and then at night he'd put this thing back in a crated box or whatever. So you got to make sure you're specific about the things that you're looking for in your unit walks.
Right. Wow. Okay. Well, we got to take a break. We're going to be back with our fourth and final segment of Multifamily Matters. You are listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Your multifamily property's water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. E-Conserve has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call E-Conserve today at 713-662-3220. For a free analysis of your property, that's eConserve at 713-662-3220.
Your property and liability insurance is one of your highest expenses. Put Ted W. Allen and Associates' 50-plus years of experience in multifamily insurance to work for you. If you have multiple properties on separate policies, you may qualify for a master policy, which can eliminate the need for multiple insurance renewals and provide you significantly lower premiums. Call Ted W. Allen & Associates at 281-378-7500. That's 281-378-7500. Or online at tedwallen.com.
Looking for cost savings and curb appeal? Call WaterLogic, the nation's specialist in multifamily property water management. Using interactive, smart water technology, WaterLogic's professionals can help you save up to 40% on irrigation water annually, potentially adding tens of thousands of dollars back into your budget. Call WaterLogic at 713-983-9555 for a no-cost irrigation usage analysis. Your property will look great, and you'll be a hometown hero.
Well, we're back with our final segment of Multifamily Matters, and we are discussing the topic of tips and tricks for implementing a value-add strategy. I'm Paul Marks, and joining me by phone is longtime multifamily industry veteran Jamie Rauscher, and founder, who's the founder and president of Axiom Multifamily Consulting, and also Greg Lozenek, chief operating officer at Newcastle Limited. During the break, Greg, you mentioned a property that you were looking at purchasing but didn't, but it had a vulture problem. What did you find out about that, or how did you find out about that, and what was the issue?
We found out about it the day we showed up, and we looked at the top of this high-rise in downtown Orlando and said, hey, there's a bunch of vultures up there. And the seller said, yeah, we got a vulture problem. So we ended up having to do a little research and bring in a specialist, animal control, and ultimately found out that, quite honestly, there was nothing we could do about the vultures, that we could put some things on the upper balconies that would deter them from perching up there. But we ended up not buying the deal, and it wasn't because of the vultures. The numbers just didn't work out.
Right. So, you know, we talk a lot about things like that that are unusual or that could be perceived as being negatives. Let's talk about some of the positives. What situations where you've implemented a value-add strategy have you had successes that have even possibly beat your projections? Either one of you.
Yeah, I'll start.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's important to, you know, think about, in some cases we underwrite an asset and we, you know, want to achieve, let's call it $100 rent bump. And we sometimes we'll hit that $100 and then we don't think about, hey, if we hit 100, can we hit 125? Can we hit 150? You know, you have to be disciplined enough to hit that 100, but then continue to be willing to push further. You know, sometimes you'll surprise yourself at what you can actually achieve if you just continue to push the envelope a little bit. You know, sometimes you get lucky and the market's stronger than you thought that it was, and that's great. You know, that's an easy win. Sometimes you have to be creative and say, you know, one example was an asset in Jacksonville that has, you know, that super attractive ceiling where it's, I forget what it's called. It's not a smooth ceiling. It's got the, what do they call that? That's it's a spackle. It's got a texture to it. It's, you know, you walk in, it reminds you of your, you know, your parents' house in 1970.
Yeah, the popcorn.
Yeah, popcorn. Yeah, mm-hmm. Thank you. So not much you can do with that, you know, unless you're willing to spend the time and the money to fix that. But, you know, I had somebody that was going through Home Depot one day and saw this faux wood paneling. And it was $125 for a sheet of this paneling. And we put it up in the kitchen area. And so now you walk into the kitchen of this apartment, and in the kitchen space, you've got that faux wood ceiling. Again, $125, as much money as we spent on that unit, you know, $1,500 on new appliances, great Subway tile backsplash. The thing that sold that unit was that $125 panel that went up in the kitchen. So our return was crazy. We increased the rents another $25 for that $125 ad.
Wow.
Again, not anything we just happened to, you know, be in Home Depot on a weekend, saw this, and thought, hey, let's try it and see if it works.
Yeah. Greg,
sometimes you get lucky with those things.
What type of examples can you tell our listeners about of things that you've seen as far as successes?
Yeah, I've seen situations where we've been involved in properties where, for example, we got better pricing on granite than we thought we were going to get. You know, so on the unit renovations, we're still able to achieve our targeted rents or exceed those, but we were able to get a better return because we were able to import granite from overseas. We've had success, too, with doing resident functions or resident open houses once we get a renovated unit done or we get a couple of them done, and we can show different levels of finishes or different color finishes. And all of a sudden now you have residents signing up to, hey, I want you to do an occupied renovation, which is not, you know, it's a little more difficult, but it's also accelerating the pace of your unit turns and accelerating your revenue growth. And I've had properties where residents, we bumped the rents in an effort to get induced turnover, but residents liked living there. The new management company was doing such a great job that they wanted to stay in place, and they wanted to stay in place without they were willing to pay the increase without actually getting the renovation, which then gives us pause to say, hey, are we charging enough for the renovation? So, you know, in all those cases, we ended up generating returns beyond expectations.
Yeah. What would be, Jamie, and I'll ask the same question to you, Greg, too, but what would be like one of the number one or number two tips you could give someone who's going to be doing a value add on a property? The if you were going to give them advice, what would you say they absolutely had to do?
I think thorough due diligence is huge. You know, Greg mentioned 100% of the lease fall audits, 100% of the unit inspection, and that's key. But I think having those vendor partners on board during the due diligence process, and because they're looking at it from a different perspective as well, you're getting kind of that outside perspective. I've had signage companies that have found siting issues that we missed just because they're looking at the building from a different perspective. So if you've got those vendor partners, getting them involved sooner rather than later. And then I think after closing, you know, don't be satisfied with that $100 premium that you underwrote. If you achieve the $100, don't be afraid to push to $125. You can always go backwards. But be willing to continue to push the envelope to see what you can get. Look for those out-of-the-box solutions like the $125 ceiling panel. Mm-hmm. You know, test it out. You know, continue to kind of play around and be creative and see what you get.
Greg, how about you?
I would say a couple things. One, I would over-communicate, both internally and externally. Don't ever assume that someone doesn't need to know something, therefore I'm not going to tell them. Over-communicate, and then you get the ideas that Jamie just brought up with the faux wood paneling ceiling, right? Boosted, you know, probably somebody didn't really, on the surface, might not have needed to know what was going on, but they did, and they're out at Home Depot, and they keep their eyes open, and boom, now you got $125 solution that's driving your returns well above expectations. The second thing I would say is you got to make sure there's one person in charge of the overall product or project. You know, it's always that case where I thought they were doing it, they thought I was doing it, somebody else thought somebody else was doing it, and then nothing gets done. So you got to have one person who's overall responsible for the project to make sure that all the tasks and the items that need to get done are getting done.
Could that be the GC, are you talking about someone internally within the
It's somebody internally.
Okay.
So somebody's got to be managing the GC. Somebody's got to be managing the on-site team. Somebody's got to be monitoring the cost and the subsequent rent increases. But you want somebody who's overall in charge of the project that is communicating with every group of people or every person that touches the asset.
Yeah, and Jamie, how have you handled that in the past? Because I know you have lots of clients in different markets.
Yeah, you know, it depends on, it's obviously client-specific, but I would say, you know, the person you're identifying is the person, you know, that Greg's mentioning that you want to be kind of the gatekeeper. This is the person that the communicator. The information funnels in and out of this one person. I think it's got to be somebody that's got to be close to the asset.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's got to be somebody that's seeing it, touching it, feeling it. You know, it can't just be kind of an analyst that's sitting, you know, in a desk that's just waiting for information to get funneled to them. It's got to be somebody that's active out in the field. From a GC perspective, I think, you know, there's a certain amount of responsibility that you have to put on the GC for the communication. But internally within your organization, it's got to be publicly known and publicly announced that this person's the person that's in charge of the program. Questions go to that person. Questions come from that person. I think that's key, to have that accountability with one person.
Yeah, it all boils down to accountability. Well, before we close out the segment in the show, I want to let our listeners know a little bit more about each of you and your backgrounds and how they could get in touch with you if they needed to ask you a question or two. Greg, why don't you start?
So, sure. According to Jamie, I've been in the business for 50 years now, so that hasn't quite been that long, about half of that. But I've run portfolios in size anywhere from 2,500 units up to 25,000 units in one market at a time, in multiple markets at a time across the nation. And I'm currently at Newcastle Limited. We're an investment management firm, acquisition, development, management of retail, multifamily, and mixed-use properties, specific to Chicago at this point in time, about $1.2 billion in value. If anybody wants to reach me, you can get me at glozinak at newcastlelimited.com, G-L-O-Z-I-N-A-K, at newcastlelimited.com. And limited is spelled out completely.
Okay, great. Jamie?
Yeah, so I formed Axiom Multifamily Consulting just over a year ago. I've been in the industry about 20 years. This is pretty much all I've done. I drove a beer cart in college. After that, got into multifamily and loved it, and I'm still in it. I've been everything from leasing consultant all the way up the chain. So I've done the investment management side. I've done the operations side. The big driver for forming Axiom was, identifying there's so much opportunity that management companies and owner operators have to enhance their platform, enhance the lives of their residents, of their employees. But a lot of times it's just finding that key target person to help roll that out and to help kind of put that strategy into motion. That was a big driver for me. If you want to reach me, my website is Axiom, A-X-I-O-M-M-S-C .com.
That's great. Well, thank you both so much for being here. I know our listeners are going to get a lot out of all your advice and what you were able to tell them about how to handle a value-add strategy. We will be back every Friday right here at 1110 KTEK, every Friday at 10 a.m. So tune in next Friday. Thank you very much for listening. You've been listening to Multifamily Matters.
Thank you for listening to Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. To find out more about the show or make suggestions for topics or interesting guests, go to multifamilyradio.com. You have been listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.